Brothers and sisters, we're ready to begin our first class. Our speaker is Brother Gary Cousins, and the theme for Brother Cousins' class this week is Nehemiah, Spiritual Leadership in Challenging Times. And today's class is entitled, The Characters Working in the Ecclesia. Brother Cousins?
Good morning, brethren and sisters. Oh, man. Must have been a rough night last night, huh? That wasn't too good. There is a handout. Should be coming around. If you're one of the lucky ones, I think the first dozen or so are in color. The rest are black and white. When I was making the copies and I went to Staples back home in Canada, I don't know how much you pay for copies here, but back home, it was, I said to the lady, I said, if I get these done and you do them in volume, because I had about 500 or 600 copies between all the different handouts, I said, what's the best price you can give me? She says, well, black and white is 11 cents. And I said, well, what about color? She goes, that's 44 cents. And so I said, well, you know, I really love these people, but, you know, they're getting black and white, okay? So, got a little bit of coaching from my coach, and apparently last night I was a little bit loud, and so I'm going to try and tone it down a little bit today. I'm going to try and just talk to you. My voice is a little bit rough this morning, so hopefully we can get through this together. But this is part two of what we started yesterday, and so you're going to want to have your hand in Nehemiah chapter 3. We're going to spend most of the morning in Nehemiah chapter 3. Actually, we're going to begin in Nehemiah chapter 2 this morning. And I'm not going to go into great detail in Nehemiah chapter 2. It just provides a backdrop for Nehemiah chapter 3. And in Nehemiah chapter 2, this is when Nehemiah comes back to Jerusalem. And he's there for 3 days, if you look at verse 11. So I came to Jerusalem and I was there 3 days. And he tells nobody that he's there. He's there in secret. And in verse 12, he gets up in the night. He says, I and some few men with me, neither told I any man what my God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. And so he's there for 3 days, and he gets up in the middle of the night, and he gets on his horse. And he goes out by night, out the gate of the valley, even before the dragon well, to the dung port, and he views the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and the gates thereof were consumed with fire. And we're not going to go into the details on this, because we're going to touch on this on our last class, when we look at Nehemiah as a spiritual leader and a strategist. But encircling the city, what Nehemiah was doing was making notes, right? He would have had his clipboard and he would have had a few men with him that were making notes on what he observed. And he would have been circling the city and looking at the wall, and he would have been examining the wall and making notes on what sections were in need of more repair than others, what sections were impassable. He would have been looking at areas where he could have, you know, built roads to bring supplies and roads to take the rubble away. And he would have been developing this plan that he would have communicated to the people and inspire the people to say by the end of chapter 2, let us arise and build. And what we have in Nehemiah chapter 3 is the plan, the execution of the plan that Nehemiah devised in Nehemiah chapter 2 when he circled at night the city wall. And so when we come to Nehemiah chapter 3, this is the chapter that is the execution chapter. This is the chapter where the work gets done. It's not just planned. It's not just an idea. It's not just a thought. This is where the plan comes to fruition and the plan gets done. And so a few overarching comments on Nehemiah chapter 3, first of all. The first comment is this. He delegates authority. So when Nehemiah assigns somebody to a section of the wall, he gives them a section of the wall and he says, you're going to repair this section from here to here. And he says, you go ahead and do it. He delegates all as many matters as he can. You have the quote there on the screen. He delegates as many important matters as he can because that creates an environment in which people grow. We must make sure that jobs are given whole and important and that people are really given the jobs. And so by delegating the jobs, Nehemiah assigns them to a section of the wall and he lets them build the wall as best they see fit, using the talents and the abilities that they have in building that wall. And maybe they borrow some ideas from their neighbors on either side and they work together to build the wall, but however they decide they're going to build the wall is what Nehemiah is willing to accept. Sometimes in the ecclesia, somebody might be assigned a task, somebody might be assigned a job in the ecclesia to do, and they go ahead and they do it with diligence, and then what do? Well, it's not really the color I would have chosen. It's not really how I would have done it. Don't know why you did it that way. And we let people work in the ecclesia, but we don't let them do the job. That's not what Nehemiah did in Nehemiah chapter 3. He didn't have time to go and look over everybody's shoulder and see what color they were going to use and what color stones and how they were going to place them and all of that. He let them do it. And by delegating authority, he gets rid of that 80-20 principle that operates in the ecclesia, right? Where 20% of the people do 80% of the work. And in our class tomorrow, we're going to talk about that 80-20 principle in the ecclesia. Nehemiah doesn't ask for volunteers, does he? He makes a list of all his resources, all the people that are available to build the wall, and he assigns them an area to do by family. Volunteerism, we're going to talk about this tomorrow. Volunteerism doesn't necessarily work in the ecclesia. And so Nehemiah assigns people to a certain section. He delegates. He understands that everybody has to have a job. Everybody has to have a task in the ecclesia. Everyone needs the satisfaction of feeling that they are contributing in some capacity to the well-being of the ecclesia before God. They need to feel engaged. Everyone in the ecclesia needs to be assigned a section of the wall. And when he looks at the people that are available to do the work, there's no partiality. It doesn't matter whether you're a vice president or a garbage collector. It makes no difference in the ecclesia. There's no one person that is more important before God in the ecclesia. There is no one person that should be doing all the work and another doing very little. There is no one person that does not have the skill set to build the wall of the ecclesia. And when you look at that list that's there, there were priests. There were non-resident commuters coming from the cities around Jerusalem to help build the wall. There were goldsmiths. There were apothecaries. There were city officials or rulers. There were women. There were children. There were temple servants. There was the city guard. There were merchants. And when you look at all of those occupations, they're not necessarily tradespeople. In fact, they're not tradespeople, are they? But they were all there building the wall of the ecclesia. All of them had the skill set to be an ecclesial mason. And he calls out those who are non-contributors. Every ecclesia has a few nobles of Tekoa, and we're going to talk about them in a minute. They're the ones that sit on the sidelines. They're the ones that are saying, that's not the color I would have chosen. That's not how I would have done it. But they're the ones that don't get up and do it. And it's a very coordinated effort. We're going to look at that handout that you have in a moment. But jobs were assigned strategically. So when Nehemiah circled the city and he saw the wall, you'll notice on your handout there that some sections of the wall are very tiny and there's a whole group of people that are assigned to build that wall. And then there's some sections of the wall that are quite large and there's only one or two that are assigned to build the wall. That's because some parts of the wall were in better repair than others. And so strategically, he signs people to the sections of the wall. And there were no gaps where one family stopped and started, or one family stopped their work, the next family picked up and carried on, and so on and so forth around the city wall. And many were assigned portions that were close to their home. That's convenient, isn't it? And they would have had a vested interest in making sure that part of the wall was well built, right? Because it was close to their home. And there's exhortation in that for ourselves as we go back to our ecclesias, isn't there? And as we work with our ecclesia, every individual ecclesia needs to develop a plan to ensure that its light is dependent upon every member, not just a few. In Ephesians chapter 4, he gave some apostles, some prophets, some evangelists, some pastors, some teachers for the work of the ministry. And we need to look at the talents and the abilities of those who exist in our ecclesia, who God has invited to our ecclesia. And we need to look at those talents and abilities, and we need to make use of those talents and abilities. And we need to make sure that everybody in the ecclesia is adding value to the well-being of the ecclesia and the brethren and sisters that are there based on their talents and abilities. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it says, the body is not one member but many, and it's those which seem to be more feeble that are more necessary. So if you pull out your handout, just to orient yourselves, and actually Amy had a great idea this morning, and I don't know where Sister Patricia is, but I'll work with her. I'm going to see if we can get this shrunk down into a half page so that you can use it and shove it in as a Bible insert into Nehemiah chapter 3. If you're interested in that, let me know, and I'll work with Sister Patricia. Maybe we can shrink them down and get them copied. And I'll try and get a color one for you. We'll see if we have the funds to do that. But just to orient yourself on this diagram, so Nehemiah chapter 3 starts at 12 o'clock, right at the top of the city there, right at the very north end where you see Eliashib and the priests. So, you know what? Gary Suntz came to me last night and he says, you know what? I can't believe that you didn't use my pointer. And I said, oh, Gary, I'm sorry. You know, I forgot to bring it up with me. And I made a note this morning, you know what? I'm going to remember to bring my pointer up. You know what? I forgot. So I'm going to be in real trouble with Gary Suntz. But anyways, right at 12 o'clock with Eliashib and the priests, that's where Nehemiah chapter 3 begins in verse 1. And in Nehemiah chapter 3, Nehemiah goes counterclockwise around the city until you get back to that 12 o'clock position. So we're going to go through Nehemiah chapter 3 and some of the people. We're not going to talk about every single one of them. We don't have enough time. But as we go around the horn, so to speak, around the perimeter of the city, I would invite you to maybe jot some references down and take notes as we talk about the different people and go counterclockwise around the perimeter of the city. One thing that you'll want to note is that there's a particular section, and you see the horse gate just above 3 o'clock there? From the horse gate up to the Tower of Mia, that's the section where the priests were, and that's going to become important in just a moment. So I'd invite you to keep that handout in front of you. We're going to go counterclockwise around the city of Jerusalem, and I'd invite you to take some notes as we go through about the people that built the wall. The other thing that we would want to note is where people came from. A lot of them, obviously, were those that were dwelling at Jerusalem or within the immediate vicinity of Jerusalem. But as we go through Nehemiah chapter 3, one thing that doesn't necessarily immediately jump out to you is that many of those who built the wall traveled a long distance to do so. And I have listed in there all the cities in Nehemiah chapter 3 where people came from to build the wall. You know, they came from as far away as Jericho and Beth-Zur and Keilah and Zenoa that were somewhere between 15 and 20 miles away from the city. You think, well, that's no big deal. I hop in my car and I'm there in, you know, 20 or 25 minutes. Right? Not so. For them, you know, that was a day's journey. That was a day's walk. And not only was it just a walk down a paved path, that was a walk through rough terrain. It was up and down. It was through hill and valley and dale. And not only was it a rough walk, but while they were walking back and forth from Jerusalem back to their home city, the Tobias and all of their cohorts were harassing them. And they were threatening them. And they were calling them names. And they were making their life difficult. And yet they still made the journey into Jerusalem to build the wall. It's a sad commentary on us sometimes, brothers and sisters, isn't it, that we have a hard time when it's hot out, jumping into our air-conditioned car and making a 25 or 30-minute drive to Bible class, or conversely in the winter. How dedicated and how determined are we to build the walls of the ecclesia? Now you're going to have to, I got to switch my slides here to a different orientation. All right. So now we want to talk about the people in Nehemiah chapter 3. And we're going to spend the rest of the morning talking about the people, the characters that are building the wall, the characters that are working in the ecclesia. And I touched on it a little bit last night in our presentation last night, but I want to reemphasize the fact that everyone has a story. Everyone in the ecclesia has a story. There is background to everyone's situation in the ecclesia. It's of paramount importance that each of us understands each other's story. And that's not just because we want to be able to work with them as they work through their issues so that they don't become one of those who are lost, like we were talking about last night. But it's also so that we understand the things that happen in their lives that are worth celebrating, that are worth rejoicing about. But we want to understand what makes every member of our ecclesia tick. We want to understand what their challenges are, what their idiosyncrasies are, what their key attributes and what talents they bring to the ecclesia. We want to know the difficulties they're having with their children. We want to know about the things that are going on in their personal life. We want to know about their occupation. We want to know about their trip that they went on and their vacation and what they experienced. We want to know the details of every member in our ecclesia. And we need to make a concerted effort to get around to all those in the ecclesia and understand those things. Yes, there's going to be some in the ecclesia that we have a greater affinity with. That's just natural. There's things that you naturally have in common. But we need, brethren and sisters, to get outside of our comfort zone and that group of people that we would naturally hang out with or naturally migrate to. We need to make a concerted effort to get out to those whom we don't necessarily have anything to do with week by week, day by day. We need to understand the story behind every member in the ecclesia. And when we read Nehemiah chapter 3, you know, it's just a list of names. But what we're going to see this morning is that every one of these people in Nehemiah chapter 3 has a story. Some positive, some negative. But every one of them has a story. And Nehemiah would have known the background. He would have known the story of every single one of them. Again, both positive and negative. And yet Nehemiah saw fit to give them the opportunity to build the wall of the ecclesia. And some did an outstanding job and some failed. But Nehemiah gives them the opportunity. So let's begin in verse 1 with Eliashib. Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 1, it says, "Then Eliashib the high priest rose up with his brethren the priests, and they builded the sheep gate, they sanctified it and set up the doors of it, even unto the tower of Mia, they sanctified it unto the tower of Hananiel." And you read Nehemiah chapter 3 and you look at that verse 1 and you say, you know, that man Eliashib, that guy is awesome. There he is right at the beginning of the list, right? He's the high priest, and there he is, first on the list, building the wall of Jerusalem. What a great example, what a great spiritual example, and a great leader, servant leader, in and amongst the people of Israel. That's the conclusion that you would make when you read verse 1. But what's his story? Though he was active in the work, perhaps, here in verse 1 of Nehemiah chapter 3, he very quickly fell short. In fact, if you turn over to verse 28, remember the section on the wall there that was the section where the priests were? This is where it becomes important. "From above the horse gate repaired the priests, everyone over against his house. After them repaired Zadok the son of Immer over against his house. After him repaired Shemaiah the son of Shechaniah, the keeper of the east gate. After him repaired Hananiah the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan the sixth son of Zalaph another piece. After him repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber." So there was this section that was repaired by the priests in verse 28. And all of the priests repaired their section of the wall, it appears, except for Eliashib. Look at verses 20 and 21. Says there in verse 20, "After him, Baruch the son of Zabai earnestly repaired the other piece from the turning of the wall unto the door of the house of Eliashib the high priest. After him repaired Meremoth the son of Urijah the son of Cuz another piece from the door of the house of Eliashib, even unto the end of the house of Eliashib. So it would seem from verse 28 that all the priests repaired the wall next to their homes, except for Eliashib. Well, that's not a very good example to be setting. And I'd suggest to you it's because Eliashib had other interests, and they weren't related to the ecclesia. Turn, if you will, to chapter 13. Nehemiah chapter 13, we're not going to get to this week, but in Nehemiah chapter 13, Eliashib creates an alliance with Tobiah. Let's read it, verse 4. And before this, Eliashib the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied unto Tobiah. He was allied unto Tobiah. And the Hebrew for allied means an intimate acquaintance. And so he had a very intimate acquaintance with Tobiah, insomuch that we read Eliashib there was in charge of the chambers of the house of God. And so when the temple was rebuilt, around the outskirts of the temple, there was a number of chambers that were built around the outskirts of the temple. And in those chambers were all the things necessary for the priests to make the sacrifices. All of the incense and all of those sort of things would all have been stored in those chambers. And what did Eliashib do? Eliashib said, you know what? We don't need these two or three chambers. You know what? I'll smash out the wall between the chambers. And you know what? I'll make some room and Tobiah can set up residence right in the temple. When we come to the end of Nehemiah chapter 13, we find that his family and Tobiah's family there is an alliance created between them through marriage. In verse 28, and one of the sons of Jehoiada, the son of Eliashib, the high priest, was son-in-law to Sanballat the Horonite. Therefore, I chased him from me. I would suggest to you, based on what we learned from Nehemiah chapter 13, if you come back to Nehemiah chapter 6, in Nehemiah chapter 6, Nehemiah says, moreover, in those days, verse 17, the nobles of Judah sent many letters unto Tobiah, and the letters of Tobiah came unto them. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era, the son of Johanan, and he had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, and they reported his good deeds before me, and they uttered my words to him. I'd suggest to you that Eliashib was probably one of them, based on what we know from Nehemiah chapter 13. Eliashib, although Nehemiah chapter 3 says he was high priest, obviously, he had not learned that you cannot serve God and mammon. Verse 2 of Nehemiah chapter 3. Next unto him builded the men of Jericho. And we just talked about the men of Jericho. They are some of the non-resident commuters, the non-resident members of the ecclesia, that were not deterred by distance. You know, and the exhortation for ourselves without belaboring it is that distance, especially in our day and age, cannot be a reason for non-responsibility or non-service in the ecclesia. Distance cannot be a reason for non-responsibility or non-service in the ecclesia. The men of Jericho. Come down to verse 4. In verse 4, I want to talk about this man, Meremoth. Verse 4 says, and next unto them repaired Meremoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz. That's all it says in Nehemiah chapter 3. But you know what? If I had a job to do, I would love to have 10 Merimoths in the ecclesia. Merimoth was dedicated, he was focused, he was reliable, and he was of absolute trustworthiness and integrity in the truth. That's Merimoth. How do we know that? We'll come back to Ezra chapter 8. In Ezra chapter 8, we're going to see that Merimoth was a priest who was known for being meticulous, he was known for being consistent, he was the model of integrity, and he was used there, we know that, because he was used to weigh and register the gold for Ezra. Ezra chapter 8, and we're going to read there at verse 33. It says, "Now on the fourth day was the silver and the gold and the vessels weighed in the house of our God by the hand of Merimoth, the son of Uriah, the priest." And so the weighing of the gold and the silver and all the vessels was headed up by Merimoth. Merimoth was the one that was in charge. He was the one that was responsible. And under Merimoth, there was a list of other names there that were given that assisted him in the weighing. Who would you put in charge of that job? Nobody that, or you would have put somebody like a Merimoth who you trusted to the nth degree, who had absolute integrity. And in verse 34, it was all weighed by number, and the weight of everyone, and all the weights were tabulated, and they were written down. And Merimoth was in charge. If you go to Nehemiah chapter 12 and verse 3, we see there that he returned to Jerusalem along with the group of people that returned with Zerubbabel. Verse 1, "Now these are the priests and the Levites that went up with Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel." And verse 3, "One of them," there's Merimoth. So he was one of the priests that returned with Zerubbabel. We know in chapter 10 and verse 5, and we're going to talk about this tomorrow, about sealing the covenant, in verse 5 of Nehemiah chapter 10, there's Merimoth, Haram, Merimoth, and Obadiah. He was one of those who sealed the covenant in Nehemiah chapter 10. Now come back to Nehemiah chapter 3. Not only was he absolutely trustworthy, not only was he absolutely meticulous, but he also was willing to do the work. Because look at verse 21 of Nehemiah chapter 3. "After him repaired Merimoth, the son of Urijah, the son of Koz, another piece from the door of the house of Eliashib, even to the end of the house of Eliashib." So there's Merimoth. He repairs his piece of the wall, and he does it diligently, he does it meticulously, and he gets that piece of the wall rebuilt, and then he sticks up his hand and he says, "Nehemiah, what else is left to do? Pick me." So Nehemiah gives him another section of the wall to do in verse 21. There's Merimoth, a man who has absolute spiritual integrity, and he comes to the ecclesia and he's willing to work and he rebuilds two sections of the wall. Wouldn't you like to have 10 of them in the ecclesia? In verse 4 of Nehemiah chapter 3, we have Merimoth. And in the middle of the verse it says, "And next unto them repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, the son of," where am I here? Meshezabeel. So who's Meshulam? Now Meshulam, similar to Merimoth, repaired two sections of the wall. So he repairs this section here in verse 4. Turn over to verse 30. "After him repaired Hananiah, the son of Shelemiah, and Hanan, the sixth of Zaleph, another piece. After him repaired Meshulam, the son of Berechiah, over against his chamber." So, Meshulam is a good worker in the ecclesia, right? Willing to work, repairs two sections of the wall. Meshulam, actually, if you come to Nehemiah chapter 8 that we looked at back on Sunday afternoon, in Nehemiah chapter 8, Meshulam was one of the ones who accompanied Ezra in the reading of the law in verse 4. Ezra the scribe stood upon a pulpit of wood which they had made for the purpose, and beside him stood Mattathiah, Shema, Ananiah, Urijah, Hilkiah, Maaseiah on his right hand, and on his left, Pediah, Mishael, Malchiah, Hashem, Hashbadana, Zechariah, and Meshulam. And so there he was, standing beside Ezra in the reading of the law. We also know, and we're not going to look it up, but from Nehemiah chapter 10 and verse 7, we also know... Oh, I should change the slide, shouldn't I? Sorry, I'm a little bit slow this morning. We also know from Nehemiah chapter 10 and verse 7 that he was one of the ones, Meshulam was one of the ones that sealed the covenant. And so here we have an individual, Meshulam, who is industrious in the truth. He's spiritually attuned. He reads the law with Ezra. But unfortunately, his children fall away. Chapter 6 and verse 18. We've read this already. For there were many in Judah sworn unto him, because he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, that is Tobiah, the son-in-law of Shechaniah, the son of Era, and his son Johanan had taken the daughter of Meshulam, the son of Berechiah. And so there was this political alliance that was made between Meshulam's family through his daughter and Tobiah. We don't know why. There's no reason given. Meshulam was industrious. He was a hard worker in the truth. But his children fell away. In verse 5 of Nehemiah chapter 3, we have the Tekoites. And next unto them the Tekoites repaired, but their nobles put not their necks to the work of the Lord. And so, the Tekoites, as a group, repaired the wall and contributed and worked together to repair the wall. In fact, the Tekoites repaired, they also repaired two sections of the wall. If you look at verse 27, it says, after them the Tekoites repaired another piece over against the great tower that lieth out, even unto the wall of Ophel. And so the Tekoites repaired two sections of the wall. You think, wow, those Tekoites, they're awesome. Right? But it's who does the work? It's the common Tekoites that do the work. Right? It's the common Tekoites that perform the function and get the dirt under their fingernails and are willing to bend their backs and drip a little sweat and perspiration in the building of the wall. It says there in verse 5, that the nobles put not their necks to the work of their Lord. And it's interesting, the word nobles, if you look it up in the Hebrew, the Hebrew word for nobles means majestic or magnificent one, according to Gesenius. Majestic or magnificent one. And that really defines their attitude, doesn't it? You know, and it's these nobles that look down their nose at everybody else in the ecclesia. Well, you know, I wouldn't have done it that way. Now, why don't you do this? Oh, I have a great idea. Why don't we do that? Do you want to help? Oh, no. That's the nobles. Really defines their attitude, majestic or magnificent one. And it's no wonder in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 26 that we're not going to look at, that it says, not many noble are called. So we're starting to run out of time. Even though I split this class in two, I'm still running out of time. So we're going to go to the next slide. I want to go down to verse 10. I want to go to Jedaiah. Jedaiah in verse 10 of Nehemiah chapter 3. And next unto them repaired Jedaiah the son of Harumaph, even over against his house. And that's all it says about him. It's all it says about Jedaiah. Little is said about him here in Nehemiah chapter 3, but he quietly goes about his work here in Nehemiah. But he's picked out by Zechariah. Turn, if you will, to, and I think the passage is there, yeah, Zechariah chapter 6. If you turn to Zechariah chapter 6, Zechariah chapter 6 takes Jedaiah as a builder of the wall here in Nehemiah chapter 3 and says, I'm going to use Jedaiah to build the temple of the Lord. I'm going to use Jedaiah to build the temple of Ezekiel. Zechariah, I got to find Zechariah. Here it is. Zechariah chapter 6, verse 8, it says, then cried unto me and spake unto me, saying, then cried he upon me and spake unto me, saying, behold, these that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country. And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, take of them of the captivity, even of Haldai of Tobijah and of Jedaiah, which are come from Babylon. So there's Jedaiah. And come thou the same day and go into the house of Josiah, the son of Zephaniah. Then take silver and gold and take crowns and set them upon the head of Joshua, the son of Jozadak, the high priest, and speak unto him, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, behold, the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of this place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and he shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne. And the council of peace shall be between them both. And the crowns shall be given to Helam, and to Tobijah, and to Jedaiah. He was to get a crown. And to Hen, the son of Zephaniah, for a memorial in the temple of the Lord. What an incredible opportunity for this man, Jedaiah, who was recognized for quietly going about his work in Nehemiah chapter 3 and will be used and recognized in the temple which is to come. Last person we're going to talk about, and I don't want to forget him, is Shallum. And this is a really cool story. This is one of my favorite ones. This Shallum in verse 12. Now in verse 12 it says, and next unto him repaired Shallum, the son of Halohesh, the ruler of the half part of Jerusalem. Now the verse 12 could have stopped right there, right? And we wouldn't even have noticed a difference between everybody else that's listed in Nehemiah chapter 3. But the verse adds, he and his daughters. Why does the verse add he and his daughters? And I'm going to suggest to you that the answer is actually back in the book of Ezra. I think the answer is back in Ezra chapter 10. So if you turn back to Ezra chapter 10, in Ezra chapter 10, they had taken strange wives while they were captive, right? And in Ezra chapter 10, they make a covenant that they're going to put away their wives. And without going into any more detail, there's a list of those in Ezra chapter 10. There's a list of those in Ezra chapter 10 that put away their wives and left them behind and returned to Jerusalem. Amongst those, in verse 24, of the singers also, Eliashib, and of the porters, there he is, Shallum and Telem and Uri. So Shallum was one of the ones that left his foreign wife behind. But look at what verse 44 says in Ezra chapter 10. All these had taken strange wives, and some of them had wives by whom they had children. Shalom, obviously, was one of them. And obviously, in a foreign land, he has taught the truth to his children. And when he said to his wife, he says, "You know what? I need to be faithful to my God. And I'm going to give you the option. You can stay here and you can worship the gods of Babylon, or you can come with me and we will worship the God of Israel." And it appears that his wife says, "Oh, you know what? Your God of Israel is not for me. I'm staying behind." It appears that his wife stayed behind, but his daughters followed him to Jerusalem. And there was Shalom. And if you look at your map, Shalom is on the left-hand side. Him and his daughters are responsible for repairing a big section of the western side of the wall. And there's Shalom and his daughters. Shalom is a single parent with his daughters working in the ecclesia to bring glory to God. What an incredible story. And so we have to stop there, brothers and sisters. I'm 10:16 on my watch. So we conclude with 1 Corinthians chapter 3. 1 Corinthians chapter 3 says, we are laborers with God, doesn't it? Wrong. It says, we are laborers together with God. Brothers and sisters, every one of us has been chosen to be in an ecclesia. Every one of us has a story. Every one of us is a mason building the wall. Let's work together to make sure that that wall is strong, that that wall is firm, and that wall is being built continuously, day by day, so that we together, despite our idiosyncrasies, despite our failings, that we together might work to bring glory to our Heavenly Father.